Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page. This article is under the banner of City of Monticello. The headline reads, Educator Wants to Learn as Newest Member of City Council. As a longtime educator, Mary Vogt knows the value of homework. So she did plenty of it before accepting an appointment to the Monticello City Council. I contacted a few previous City Council members. My two questions for them were, what made you want to be on the council, and why aren't you now? Just to get a feel if there were concerns. That was not the case with either of them. They enjoyed their time on the council, said Vogt, the 15-year principal of Monticello's Lincoln Elementary School, who was named to the City Council on January 27th. But her research did not end there. Vogt went through past meeting minutes to see what had been the topics of discussion, in addition to corresponding with Jeremy Jones, who had previously held the council seat. After the process, Vogt concluded, This is an opportunity to give back to the community. Monticello has been very good to me. And as in other areas of her life, she sees it as an opportunity to learn something new. When presented with the option, what it came down to was, I feel like I could learn quite a bit from our current council about the process and just wanted that experience. I wanted to be able to learn. I wanted to be able to give back. And I wanted to be able to be a voice for people in the community, she said. Vogt grew up in Champaign, graduating from Centennial High School in 1991, then earned her teaching degree from Illinois State University. After student teaching in White Heath, she became a middle school teacher in Jacksonville for 8 years, followed by 1 year stint as a principal at AC Central Middle School in Ashland. She then landed in Monticello in 2005 as the principal at Lincoln and feels that experience will help her as a Ward 1 representative on the council. I think where it helps me is I already know you can't keep everyone happy all the time, but you can try, commented Vogt. You can listen, you can let people be heard, and then you can make an educated decision based on what people have to say. With the role I have to do that all the time. I am not the be-all, end-all. I don't know everything, said Vogt, who also lived in Monticello with relatives while she went to college. I think she's a very qualified candidate, a very qualified person, and I think she brings a wealth of knowledge to the council, and I look forward to working with her, said Monticello Mayor Larry Stoner, who appointed her to the vacancy. The City Council then unanimously endorsed her. Even with her experience, Vogt had her share of butterflies after she officially sat down at the council table. To say that I wasn't nervous would be an absolute lie. It took a little while listening to the other council members asking questions before I felt like I did have a valid question, added the local school administrator. I don't want to be just the rubber stamp. But I also don't want to be that person who rocks the boat just to rock the boat. I wanted to make informed decisions. As a single mother for the past decade, Vogt also hopes to give a voice to that segment, both single moms and dads of the Monticello population. I feel strongly about that. I feel there are some people who have great ideas and opinions, but would never be able to put their opinions out publicly. I'm someone that they can share those ideas with and their opinions, she noted. Vogt also has a master's degree and superintendency certification. Her council term runs until the spring of 2021. So for her, this is a test period to see if she wants to continue as a council representative. I want to see how it goes, she said. For me, most importantly, is how the community responds. Am I somebody who the community feels comfortable being their voice? And if I am not the person who they feel comfortable representing them, well then, I shouldn't continue to represent them. Next on the front page, we have this article under the banner of U of I Extension. The headline reads, Spring Break Sewing Club. Spring Break Basic Sewing Club will be offered from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. March 16th through March 20th at the Piatt County Extension Office, 210 South Market Street in Monticello. This program is open to all youth ages 8 to 18. Spring Break Basic Sewing Club is a week-long program that will teach youth how to use a sewing machine, read a pattern, select material, and more. Following the week-long sewing spree, participants will have the opportunity to use their new skills to create curtains for the 4-H Memorial Camp as a community service project, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, March 21st, at the Piatt County Extension Office. Parents are welcome to help during the community service project. There will be some sewing machines available for use, but participants are welcomed to bring their own. Learning to sew is a real-life engineering and construction project. Research has shown that youth who learned to sew a simple project had an increase in creativity following the activity. Learning to sew can also set the stage for enjoying a stress-relieving hobby as adults. A supply fee will be charged for 4-H members, and youth not enrolled in 4-H will pay a larger supply fee. The supply fees include a personal sewing kit that each participant will take home at the end of the program. Register for Spring Break Basic Sewing Spree online at go.illinois.edu/dmp or call 217-762-2191. The deadline to register is March 11th. For more information about Extension and 4-H, it is available at go.illinois.edu/dmp. Turning now to page A2, under the banner of Monticello Schools, we have this article headlined, Lunchroom Talk Now Encouraged at Lincoln Elementary School. Ever since Mary Vogt started as the Lincoln Elementary School principal 15 years ago, the required 1 minute of silence at the beginning of lunchtime struck her as unrealistic for kindergarten and first graders. To expect a group of 85 six-year-olds to sit quietly, I feel is setting them up for failure, and it's setting up the adults for frustration, said Vogt, adding that the noise level would normally explode after that initial moment at lunch hours. Truly, when we sit down for a meal at home, we don't expect anyone to be silent. When we're in a restaurant, we don't expect anybody to be silent. So in an effort to just encourage possible social interactions while also allowing time for eating, I thought, why don't we do these conversation starters? The results have been more disciplined lunch hours, some hilarious responses, and some meaningful insights from the school's youngsters. One of her favorites, on the first day, small group lunchroom conversation started. On January 20th, students were asked, if you were a teacher, what rule would you make? No one can walk in the hall. They all have to skip, suggested one student. Another thought obstacle courses in the hallway would be good for students, or that it should be recess all day. Oh, and one student thought the teachers should do all the work instead of the students. On another day, when asked which superhero they would be and what superpower they would have, they had similarly unique answers. Somebody said she would be Bubblegum Girl, and instead of shooting out webs, she would get to shoot out bubblegum and would share it with all her friends. Somebody else was saying, I would rather be a villain than a superhero because it seems like villains have more fun, said Vogt. A new cafeteria seating arrangement has 4 to 6 students in each group. Rules for the lunchtime think tank are simple. You take turns talking, don't interrupt, and eat when not talking. Lunchroom supervisor Stephanie Bilek has seen a noticeable difference. I find that I am less frustrated because I'm not having to shout over the kiddos. It makes it a lot easier on us, really, said Bilek. It's also made a big difference in interactions with people they maybe wouldn't have before. They go on and play outside with them, so they make new friends, she added. Vogt has been elated at some of the answers that come out of the mouths of babes when the question of the day is posed. There are several things that impress me that they come up with. These are 5, 6, and 7-year-olds, like a few kiddos that first day on with what rule you would make. Things like everyone should be kind to each other all the time, we should never hit anyone. So things we take for granted, we are teaching them and they come up with on their own, she said. The lessons also tie better into what teachers are doing the rest of the school day. Taking turns. Learning to wait your turn or be patient. So again, along with the reading, writing, math, everything we teach here, I always tell parents that we are also teaching life skills. We're teaching them how to stand in line. We're teaching them how to share. We're teaching them how to say please and thank you, said Vogt. Then why aren't we doing that in the cafeteria? The Lincoln Elementary principal is not sure how long the lunch conversations will go, but will continue to pose questions of the day as long as they are fruitful to the cafeteria environment and continue to work for the benefit of her students. Our next article is under the banner of Police, Courts, and Fire. The headline reads, Unfit for Trial. An Iowa man who allegedly fired shots in a Bement neighborhood almost 2 months ago has been found unfit to stand trial. Nema Torbor Siaway, 23, of Cedar Rapids, had been charged in December in Piatt County Circuit Court with 2 counts of aggravated discharge of a weapon in connection with a bizarre incident that happened December 7th at a home on Mansfield Street on the south edge of the village. Piatt County Sheriff David Hunt said Siaway pulled into a driveway about 8:30 that Saturday, got out, and began firing a gun in the air. That prompted the homeowner to get his shotgun and fire warning shots over Siaway's head. Siaway made strange remarks during the incident, which brought about 10 deputies and state troopers to the area. No one was injured in the about 2-hour standoff between Siaway, who sat in a car much of the time, and police. Hunt said Siaway appeared intoxicated. Siaway was examined by Champaign psychiatrist Dr. Lawrence Jekyll, whose report was considered by the attorneys and Judge Jeremy Ritchie on January 28th. The lawyers agreed with Jekyll's findings that Siaway is not currently able to understand the criminal charges against him or cooperate with his attorney. He was ordered to get inpatient treatment at a Department of Human Services facility. His case will be reviewed by Ritchie on February 25th. Our next article is headlined, Kidnap Charges. 3 Monticello residents have been criminally charged for allegedly taking a 3-year-old boy from his grandmother's home in Urbana to be with his biological father. Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lazar said the father, Farron Kelly, 43, apparently did not have a legal right to custody of his son. Consequently, Kelly and 2 friends, Heather Ciula, 29, and Paige Zumwalt, 30, were charged Friday with kidnapping and child abduction, Class 2 and 4 felonies, respectively. The charges stemmed from activity that started about 12:05 a.m. on January 30th, according to Champaign County Sheriff's Lieutenant Kurt Apperson. He said the boy's grandmother was caring for him when, while her daughter is in the process of moving to Missouri. The grandmother was asleep on the couch of her home on Fern Drive when she heard a noise and realized that her daughter's sister, Ciula, was coming in with her friend, Zumwalt. One of the women said she needed to use the restroom, and the grandmother agreed to that. They then took the toddler and left with him over the grandmother's protests. Apperson said she was unable to stop the pair because she has limited mobility. She then called Ciula and told her to return the boy, but she did not. The grandmother called 911 and sheriff's deputies. They learned that Kelly is the boy's biological father, and that he and the 2 women were all staying in Monticello. Deputies eventually found the child with Kelly. He was unharmed and returned to his grandmother. The trio initially declined to talk to deputies, but Lazar said all eventually admitted they just wanted to have a day of visitation with the child and intended to return him. Bond for Kelly was set at $50,000, bond for Ciula and Zumwalt at $10,000. All were told to be back in court February 25th. Next up, we have the announcement of VMint Spelling Bee winners. VMint schools held their spelling bees on January 22nd. Fifth grader McKenna Kindred was the winner, with eighth grader Quinn Flavin the runner-up. Grade level winners all advanced to the Piatt County Spelling Bee at 9 a.m. Thursday, February 20th in Cerro Gordo. Those advancing are Clark Ryder for 4th grade, Kindred, 5th grade, Shelby Center, 6th grade, Gabby Block, 7th grade, and Flavin, 8th grade. Next on page A3, we have this article under the banner of City of Monticello. The headline reads, Council Delays Housing Project Vote. The decision on whether to allow zoning permits for a 46-unit apartment project in Monticello to be amended will wait for another day. After audience members expressed concern about the change from senior citizen-only housing to allowing all ages and possible issues with parking and safety, the City Council on January 27th decided not to waive the second reading on the ordinance, which pushes a decision back to February 10th. I'm concerned about egress. I'm concerned about no sidewalk. I'm concerned about kids, audience member Fred Skokorski said of the apartment complex proposed for 1412 North Market Street. The town and people here are very accepting of the senior living facility based on good faith that that was going to happen. Variations were approved for that purpose because seniors don't generally have two cars, added Sikorsky. Now we have a different situation, more kids. Those sentiments were echoed by several others, including Monticello School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman. He noted the project proposed by MVAH Partners, which would be located at the current Monticello Bowl site, is in a tax increment financing district. That could mean more students for the school district without increases in real estate taxes to help pay for it. I am a believer in growth and change. I would like to see new houses and subdivisions in and around our town, said Zimmerman. But the school district is one of the main reasons people move to Monticello, and we need to ensure that it is supported in all ways, including financially. This project, with a negative financial impact on Monticello schools, is the reason I would urge the council to vote no on this project variance. When a special use permit and variance to parking requirements were approved last year, MVAH had proposed a seniors-only population residing there in an income-capped environment. But spokesman Hume Ahn said an application for Illinois Housing Authority funds was turned down, partially because there is a penalty in scoring when housing units are restricted. We applied for funding from the state to build this development last year. We weren't able to get the funding, said Ahn. This year they set up the scoring such that if you're doing senior versus non-senior, you're at a 14-point disadvantage on the 100-point scale. So we don't think we would be competitive for the funding if we went with seniors, so that's why we're lifting the age restriction. The project, as currently planned, would include 35 one-bedroom, 695-square-foot units and 11 two-bedroom ones measuring 907 square feet. Ahn said it would include a $12.5 million investment in the community, including 35 to 40 temporary construction jobs and two permanent on-site employees after construction is completed. The MVAH spokesman added the company has constructed 6,000 apartment units in 16 states, including complexes in Morton and Rantoul, with construction starting on one in Bloomington this spring. A variance approved last year allows for 58 parking places, less than the 92 that zoning code requires. Ahn said a parking study done after lifting the age requirement estimated 46 spaces would be the most needed especially in low-income housing units. Council members were wary of apartments that would be located along a state highway, Route 105, without sidewalks or a safe way to cross the street to the adjacent Forest Preserve Park for other amenities. I just don't consider this being an area where any resident could easily walk to a grocery store, said Vogt, adding that the situation could mean that housing complex residents would need vehicles. Council member Tammy Siebens was still concerned about the number of parking places. What is your plan for overflow parking? Because I think if you have a two-person household, and especially if you're opening it up to families and so forth, more than likely each one of those people will have a vehicle, said Siebens. Therefore, you are already short on spaces. That's not necessarily our experience with affordable housing, responded Ahn. If we had a lot of two- and three-bedrooms, that would be a bigger concern, but given that it's 35 one-bedroom and 11 two-bedroom, the unit doesn't lend itself to that many cars. Ahn also said that MVAH will still market to seniors and said they don't anticipate too many children. Council rules require two readings of ordinance prior to a vote, but those same rules also allow aldermen to waive the second reading and consider them. It is a measure that is usually approved, but on January 27th, the vote was 4-3 against waiving the second reading. It does not defeat the ordinance amendment, but does push it back to the next council session. If the permit amendment is voted down, the original 2019-1 would still be in place, but would restrict MVAH to renting to seniors only. And under the heading of cannabis fines, council members unanimously approved an amendment to the city nuisance ordinance to make cannabis violations subject to local fines. Violations could include possession by those less than 21 years of age, providing false identification to purchase now legal recreational cannabis, prohibited conduct in public places, and cultivation at non-approved facilities. Fines could range from $100 to $750, depending on the offense. So what this will do is shift any fines for the violations from going to county and state to staying here in Monticello only, so that the money generated would be city money and not county and state money, said Monticello Police Chief John Carter. In other action, the council heard an update from Sangamon Valley CEO students Colin Jones, Eric Kessler, and Briggs Fultz, who told about their experiences thus far in the countywide efforts first year. Also present was CEO facilitator Lisa Shepherd. Also on page A3, we have this article. It's under the banner of Piatt County, and the headline reads, Nursing Home Official Resigns. The assistant executive director at the Piatt County Nursing Home has stepped down. The resignation of Kara Olson, effective February 22nd, was accepted by the Piatt County Board Nursing Home Committee on January 27th. The motion came after a 40-minute closed session and included the statement that Olson's attendance during the notice period is not required, but she is expected to cooperate in the transition with the executive director as required. We thank her for her 10-plus years of service and wish her well, said Nursing Home Director Scott Porter. Olson was the director of the nursing home's Maple Point Supportive Living for about 9 of those 10 years and was appointed as the assistant executive director at the nursing home in January of 2019. Porter said he was unsure at this time whether the position would be filled. Next up for today is this article. It's under the headline of Deland Weldon School's Mental Health Worker Update Given to DW School Board. Piatt County Mental Health Center Director Tony Kirkman told the Deland Weldon School Board the on-site mental health professional engaged 6.8% of your total student population in the first semester of the collaborative program between the Mental Health Center, Kirby Medical Center, and DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department, established in the fall. It's the start of the second semester, so it's report card time, and we need to come in kind to tell you how we're doing, Kirkman said at the monthly school board meeting January 15th. If you recall, the very first time we were here, the proposal was the Bi-County Health Department, the Mental Health Center, and Kirby Medical Center have been working on as a collaborative because we believe that an integrated approach to wellness will benefit the community. Having a mental health professional come to the schools was important because student referrals weren't making it to the mental health center, Kirkman said. One of the main goals of the program is trying to figure out how to reduce barriers to treatment or any other issues of access, he said. So meeting children where they're already congregating is a very logical choice to reduce those barriers. We have all gotten a little bit frustrated with seeing these conditions grow over time, not get better. And we want to change that, said David Remmert, public health administrator at the Bi-County Health Department. We want to provide services a little bit different than we always have. Under the heading of More Event Tables, board member Shannon Summers told the board of the need for more portable tables in the district. Summers said there are currently 10 to 15 tables organizers can use for different events, but they often have to borrow tables from the D-Land Celebration Group. We just need white tables, Summers said. Right now, I think between both schools, we only have about 14 total that are floating around. If you've ever looked at those tables, some of them are bent, some of them are bowed. I would like to purchase 20 more. The question of storage space came up with where the district to purchase additional tables. The board discussed building a rack in the garage to store the tables, keeping them up off the floor and limiting the needed space. A cart would also likely be needed to transport the tables from the garage to event locations. My biggest thing is going to be storage, Superintendent Amanda Geary said. But I'm not opposed to getting some more. It could be in the budget for next year. Next up, this article is under the banner of Piatt County, and the headline reads, A Health Insurance Change Imminent for County Nursing Home Employees. The Piatt County Board Nursing Home Committee has given the go-ahead for that facility to switch from the county's self-funded health insurance plan to a fully funded one through Health Alliance. But it will likely be at least March 1st before the change goes into effect for nursing home employees. When it occurs, about half of the 90 county employees who opt in for health insurance will go to Health Alliance. The other half will stay on the current self-funded plan, at least for now. The county had considered changing all county employees at once, but was concerned about run-out costs, which are health costs incurred on one plan, but not claimed until the county leaves that plan. The county would have full responsibility for such claims. If a portion of the county remains on self-funded, there are no run-out costs, although it will become an issue should the remaining staff be switched, possibly when the current contract expires, September 1st. Since only a portion of the county employees are migrating to Health Alliance, the cost for the plan will be about $860 per month per person. That is more than the $710 price if the entire county had switched. But we will still save the county about $80,000 in premium costs annually under the current plan. Although the committee approved the move on January 16th, it was too late to change to Health Alliance by February 1st, although a March 1st start date could occur. This has been the Piatt County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.